We're beginning.
Welcome to Read Comics.
Yay!
Number 28.
Wow. One of our book club episodes. I'm Jason.
I'm Mike.
I'm Marty.
Florence.
I'm Susie.
Yay!
Marty was sad he didn't get to go first.
Well, and especially because it was his pick.
That's true. Yes. This was my pick. PS 238, the first issue of which is called...
I need to look something up now.
When with Liberty and...
Recess.
For all. That's pretty good. So, pretty much we decided that all we have to say about this is that we liked it.
That's
it.
Decided that for everybody
else. Podcast over.
Yeah, we should say that some of us have read much more than this first volume. There are now 7 volumes.
But we'll only be discussing the first one.
We shall
they
see
all blur together
how restrained we are. Yeah, exactly. So, Susie's read the first 4, or have you read all 6 now?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. So maybe there are only 6, not 7. I've read all 6, Marty's read all 6, and Jason's read 1, and Mike has read...
1.
I've only...
All or most.
Doesn't matter.
I took it away from Mike, even though he still has, the last issue to read in it, because I need to find the thing. There was something in one of the issues where I'm like, that's why Marty loves this. And I just found it.
Does it involve robots?
No, actually, it doesn't involve robots.
Was it that guy's...
It has to do with aliens coming to take over the Earth. And what they're after.
Marshmallow Peeps?
That's it!
I'm the one that likes Peeps, though. You weren't as big in Peeps as I was.
I go back and forth about Peeps. But I have had Peeps things in the past. I wouldn't go so far as to say fetishes.
Well, we have a Peeps stuffed animal.
That's true. We do have a Peeps stuffed animal.
Yeah.
It's almost Peeps time, isn't it?
You can
it
get
is.
Peeps at any holiday.
I know, it's ridiculous.
Yep.
Chocolate bunnies coming.
It makes
through.
Them less special.
I'm fine with Halloween Peeps. The ghost-shaped black Peeps are cool.
I don't think they taste as good. The yellow Peeps
taste
the same. The yellow Peeps taste the best.
I like pink Peeps too,
what
and the blue Peeps.
Better, the yellow chickens or the pink bunnies?
Ooh, that's a good question. You know, yellow chickens or chicks are the traditional one, I think. So,
well, that's because they peep.
They're like,
bunnies
peep,
don't really
peep,
peep,
peep.
Sure they do.
Peep, 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 peep.
You squeeze them hard enough.
No, I don't like the, even the pink, I think, doesn't taste as good as the yellow.
No, they're still good.
Well, peeps, we're talking about PS 238.
The P is for peeps.
It's peeps.
Do you want to do a
238.
Quick intro, Marty?
Yes, tell us about this comic of which we've read.
All right, PS 238 is about a public school that's underground and...
Why was that so sinister?
He discovered the secret of what the initials mean!
Whoa!
No, I was revealing it to everyone else. That's why it was sinister. I was, giving it away. Anyway, it's a school for paranormal / superhuman children, and Death goes there.
No, it was Santa.
No.
Dream.
Dream.
Yeah. Not Death, sorry. Yeah. He references Death, though, almost every time we see him. Anyway.
Except, he didn't really have that much in
He's barely in the first issue.
Oh, okay.
First trade.
Well,
first
he's
trade.
Barely in the other ones, too. He's kind of just... He's kind of a running joke.
He's the one that makes people daydream.
What was that, Susie?
He pops up a couple of times in the later trades, but yeah, he's not a major part of any of the stories. He just floats in, says something funny, and floats back out.
Yeah. I think he's kind of a gag. Anyway, the main...
That always makes me happy.
Totally.
Yeah, no, I really like his appearances. So the main characters are... in this first one, it's almost like every single issue is introducing another main character or some characters.
There's a lot of intros going on.
Yeah, later
but
on.
It's, I was just going to say, mostly it's Captain Clarinet.
Yeah.
It
felt in the beginning, especially more about Captain Clarinet.
Oh, does he lose focus later on?
I think later on, it's really more about the kid that's still human. Mm. The kid that is... I'm sorry, what?
The kid that has no powers.
Yeah.
But who is clearly finding ways around that.
Oh, totally.
Yeah.
Well,
I love that.
Well, the thing is that they're all kind of a parody of a very popular
character.
Like, they're the son of a character. And I could see, you know, this kid is, this powerless kid is, you know, going to be a Batman type person someday.
Yeah.
Someone who doesn't have superpowers, but still fights crime with the best of them.
Without the psychosis that's to drive it.
Well,
yeah. Yeah, I think
that's what this is missing. The characters don't have any psychoses.
Well, I don't know that that's true.
Yeah, they're still coming.
Yeah, totally.
Well, clearly the Zodok or whatever his name was.
Zodon.
Reminded me of MODOK, I guess.
Oh, yeah, okay.
And the Dr. Doom kid.
What's that, Susan?
And a reference for him. Who
is
he a parody of?
Well, I don't know if he's necessarily a parody of somebody, but he reminded me of the Marvel villain MODOK, who is kind of a big head that floats around in this little floating thing. So,
okay.
Is it egg-shaped?
It's head-shaped.
It's a big head, and then he's got these tiny little arms and legs, and he floats.
I think I've seen pictures of him
because
he's just so weird looking.
Yep. They actually
his name stands for something too, and I can't remember what it is.
Something organism.
Dorky.
Mutated organism designed.
By Kirby.
Well, something like that. Yeah.
Designed. Oh, killing. I don't know. But, he and the Dr. Doom character, I can't remember his name either.
Von Fogg.
Yeah.
Yep.
Those are the two with obvious psychoses going on. Superiority complexes.
It's so funny to me, though, that they're, like, exactly like normal kids. You know, like, they're really not that different from the other ones. They just have different goals, you know?
Like, Zodok's my favorite character.
Yeah.
Really? He's actually one of my least favorite. I don't care for him that much.
I think you see him more later, too. Not that he changes, but that he grows on you.
Really?
Okay.
But yeah, it's not like he's my favorite, and, you know, I think he's the model person and my hero and inspiration. I just enjoy reading him.
I think they give him a little bit too much attention, especially early on. Like, none of the stories are really about him, but he is always around. He's got more dialogue than probably anybody else, and he's always carrying the punchline, it seems like.
It does kind of seem like he is sort of a punchline. Like,
yeah.
Well, he's kind of a deus ex machina, little bit.
Yeah.
That does continue, I think.
And as brilliant as he...
a presence. Other characters will come in and out, but he's pretty consistently in most issues.
Well,
but
as
not
a,
centered around them,
right? He is a flying, funny storytelling device. I mean, he moves things forward.
Yeah,
does he move things forward? I haven't seen. See, as brilliant as he is, he hasn't really driven any of the.
Wait till next issue.
Okay.
Yeah, the first issue is kind of unique in that it is pretty much standalone introductory stuff. As it goes on, you get much more continuation of the stories from book to book and issue to issue.
I agree.
The Zero issue, which, you know, kind of had the public service announcements, I got the feeling that those were kind of standalone things in each issue because they started talking about characters that they hadn't introduced yet, and they got into something about some congressional hearings, and at that point I wanted to stop reading that and just read the rest of the stories and then come back to it because it seemed like I was missing a lot.
What the Zero issue seemed like to me with the separate PSAs was almost like maybe webcomics that came out
That's what I thought might have been.
The series ever started and then got collected as a Zero issue to launch the actual comic itself.
So it's more like teasers of this universe?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the design of Zodon changed a bit He doesn't look that... I'm at the page right now, and he's not as squat as he is later on.
I didn't notice
he's
that.
He's much bigger
in relation
to everybody else than he is here.
I think the art really changes over the course of, you know, the six trades. I mean, as you would expect, but...
Yeah.
I think especially in that early one, like, it looks very different, I think.
Have we even said who does the comic?
Yes,
yet?
We should give a little bit more background. It's by Aaron Williams, who writes and draws it, if I'm not mistaken.
Yep.
Who also wrote and drew Nodwick.
Yep.
Which, honestly, when I heard that, I was less excited about it.
I've never seen Nodwick.
Have you seen Nodwick?
Of course. I mean, we were D&D players. And so it was in Dragon Magazine. And
well, I never actually read Dragon Magazine, and
oh.
I knew of Nodwick, but never really read it because it just wasn't my thing.
Yeah. I've read other D&D comics, and I've never read Nodwick. And this reading this really made me want to read Nodwick.
Yeah.
So
Nodwick is
some of his web comics, but not Nodwick.
What are his other web comics?
Both Nodwick and this were web comics. If not first, at the same time. And he has only, as far as I know, he just has one other one called, it has Nerd in the title.
What have you been reading, Susie?
I've read Full Frontal Nerdery.
That's the
Nerdity, which is about gaming. And Backwards Compatible, which seems to be more about computer programming. So I didn't like them quite as much as this, because I'm not a gamer or a computer programmer, but they were clever, and the art is very uniform to what this is.
Well, and my impression is that part of his purpose in doing this comic was to stretch outside of that specific niche, and to, you know, potentially have something that was more mainstream, more accessible.
More marketable.
Yeah.
Probably.
When did this... 2004, I guess, is when the foreword was written. I don't know when the first issue came out.
How often is it published, do you know?
I don't know.
Well, I think that it has become the most regular of his comics. Like, there's actually more of these now than there are of Nodwick. And
well, hasn't he been doing Nodwick for long before
this? I think so.
Well, Nodwick started in the 90s.
Yeah.
Yeah. Dragon.
And it started in 2004.
My understanding is I think there's actually more trades of this now than there are of Nodwick.
Well, Nodwick wasn't always a full issue either. It was
single-page comics. Yeah.
Well, and every time we've brought this up at a comic shop or anywhere, all people have said is how nice this guy is. You know, people who have met him at conventions, it sounds like he just has a reputation, and reading the forwards as well from his colleagues.
Yeah.
Same thing that the guy in the source said, which was just, he's a really good guy, really modest. It's sort of remarkable that any of his stuff gets any kind of marketing, because that's just not his thing, but it's kind of, it makes me feel better about supporting and buying all these mini volumes.
And these would be awesome comics for kids too, because they don't talk down to kids.
Yep.
Right.
And they're fun, and the kids would identify with the characters, I think, pretty well. He does a really good job at having that kid voice without it being dumb.
Yeah,
right.
I totally agree.
I was really excited, actually, that this was, like, an all-ages comic that I liked, because I've been looking for ones, you know, to give to relative kids, and, like, you know, other than Bone, I haven't really found any that were supposed to be, you know, kid or all-ages that I actually enjoyed, and I don't want to be giving out comics that I don't particularly like, you know?
I just found a picture of the principal cupping a robot.
Cupping?
Yeah.
So apparently we're wrong. It's not all ages. It's dirty.
What is there?
Okay, that's weird.
It's poor hand placement.
Yeah,
it is.
But
way to go, Mike.
And now no kid can ever read it again.
Speaking of finding things in the art, I found two little Easter eggs. One pretty not well hidden. I mean, it's blatant, but the other one was a little more subtle. The first one, which I caught on to, was a reference to Barry Ween. If you don't know who that is, that's a comic book written by Jud
Winnick.
And they had a footnote, so it's not really an Easter egg. But I had read some Barry Wayne.
Being that Zodan, the character we were talking about before, likes to curse constantly, so instead of exposing the children in the school and the readers to all the little
punctuation
points and stuff to cover up the cursing, they implanted him with a Barry Wayne chip, which caused him to put out very like random words anytime he cursed, like rutabaga, instead of whatever it was he was trying to say. If he cursed too much and got too angry, he would start singing show tunes.
Yeah,
that was awesome.
Which just the Barry Wayne reference was very entertaining to me because I had read some of that in the past. So
I've read like an issue, and Barry Wayne is a child genius. Is he evil or is he just
no? He's
really
good.
Smart?
He's just, a brilliant child.
He's beyond good and evil.
He's also very, very profane.
Yeah. Yeah. And he's got a crush on this girl, and he hangs out with this guy who's not very smart.
So, what's the other Easter egg?
Did anybody see the Starship Enterprise in there?
I vaguely remember that, actually.
Do you?
Yeah. Where was it?
It's on the schematic that, the...
Yeah. I remember seeing that.
Oh, do you?
Okay. Let me see.
It's in this panel here.
I don't remember seeing that.
It's funny.
It's also the newest version of the Enterprise, if I'm not mistaken. The one from the last TV series that they had.
The one called Enterprise?
Yes.
obscure show. No, I really enjoyed it, and I want to finish reading the rest of them.
Oh, well, we've got...
You know, when I get through my stack of library ones.
I did enjoy it, but I don't know if it's something that I would really... continue reading, just because I'm not really into the humorous, light comics. I tend to go.
Oh God, you must love comics nowadays, then.
Dark
Reign, Faces of Evil.
What's Faces of Evil?
That's the DC version of Dark Reign.
Oh. Which conceptually, I love it. In execution, not so much, but. But no, it was entertaining. It was a lot of fun. I wanted to color them.
I know what you mean. I actually had that same impulse.
Actually, I was reading... I remember looking at the cover and then started reading and then kind of had ideas of what they all looked like with color. And then looked at the cover again and was like, no, that's wrong.
Well, and I have to say, if someone did describe this to me, I would not think I would like it. Like, I wouldn't think that that's what I was looking for out of a comic. But it was really well executed. And I think, especially having read all the, these six of the volumes so far, I don't ever feel like he's just retreading on the concept. I feel like after he established the world, he started telling stories in it rather than coming back to, oh, well, look, everybody, it's a school for superheroes over and over and over again.
Yeah. Who's everybody's favorite character from the first trade? Because I don't know who's introduced.
I guess I already said Zodan's my favorite character to read, although I identify with Tyler the most.
Yeah.
Which one's... Tyler's the unpowered one? Okay.
Right. Well, I think that's why he's the central character going forward, is he's sort of the audience's connection to that world.
Right.
Yeah.
Although he's not just the kid who has no powers. He's the kids both his parents are, two of the most powerful... superheroes in the world. That's why he's there, because they insist on him going there, hoping he will actually develop powers.
Right, he basically bullied the school into accepting him, even though he doesn't actually fit the criteria.
Did.
His parents, they don't want
to go.
No, that's what I mean. The parents bullied the school into
getting
him in there.
I don't know if necessarily the book needed a connection for the audience into the world. I think that without him, if they didn't...
It feels richer with him in it.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely, he adds a lot to it. But before he was introduced, I didn't have a problem really connecting with the characters.
Oh, yeah, no way.
Because...
Not really, but...
Even though they all had superpowers, they definitely went through things that we could recall from our schoolhood days,
Yeah.
They had to deal with bullies, they had to...
I think the author needed him. Because once he had established him, the stories felt like much more, much richer, and much like he started really going.
Mm-hmm.
Well, his
once Tyler was there, the author started taking the stories into, you know, a much deeper level, and then yeah.
Actually,
so
now
the audience needed him, but I think maybe Aaron Williams did.
Now I'm really curious as to when this came out because, Susie, have you seen the movie Sky High?
I have, yeah.
And
you reminded me of this.
Tyler is making me think now of the lead in Sky High and his parents and how he, you know, was going to basically PS-238 but up in the sky rather than underground. And he showed up for his first day and didn't have any powers and got sent to gym where he almost got killed because everyone's like, oh, well, your parents are the most powerful heroes ever, so, you know, we can throw you through the wall and nothing's going to happen to you, except he didn't have powers.
Well, the first trade was printed in June of 2008. I'm sorry, 2004. I don't know when Sky High came out. But, you know, assuming that the issues came out before the trade was published, it could have been 2002 or 2003 when it started.
I'll look up when Sky High was published. Yeah, I had seen it.
Marty's already looking it up.
I really like Captain Clarinet, but I like him in relation to the other characters.
Sky High came
out in
2005.
2005?
Oh, so Sky High ripped them off.
Well, it depends. When did Tyler get introduced?
Tyler was there from the beginning.
But, well, the trade was published in 2004, so.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Although, you know, who knows how long that script was in development before the movie came out.
It's true.
So, it's probably one of those.
And nothing is in a vacuum.
Like, just two people coming up with the same idea at the same time.
Yeah.
Which happens.
So, Jason, were you saying Tyler was your favorite character?
No, Captain Clarinet.
Oh, Captain Clarinet.
Yeah, and actually, I think that they go in interesting directions with him later, too, so.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a good one to keep an eye out for.
What about you, Marty? Who's your favorite?
Yeah, I don't know. I guess I kind of felt like especially earlier on, Captain Clarinet really was my favorite. And even later, but in the very latest trade, it's very scary and sad where they're going with him. So now I think it's more Tyler, but in those early times, it was definitely Captain Clarinet.
Really? I would have thought it would have been Zodan.
I'm actually more of a Von Frog.
Fog
fan.
Did you say who your favorite one was?
I haven't said, and actually, I'm not sure I can decide. I mean, I feel like I know Taylor the best, but...
Tyler.
Boy, well, I read all of these months
ago.
Well,
you thought you knew him the best.
Right. But,
Yeah, there's actually, like, three or four other characters I think I want to talk about. But go ahead, please keep going.
Are they in upcoming trades?
No, some of them are in the first one and some of them aren't. I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't know. I have a lot of affection for Zodan. I have a lot of affection for the little girl with the big glasses and the
Susie,
powers.
Yeah. I can't. I'm trying to find her code name.
Susie Fusion, I think.
Yeah. Oh, do they introduce the kids for class president in this one?
No.
Oh.
No. That's a good plot, but I don't know if they're my favorite characters.
No, I can't say they're my favorite characters, but I just really enjoyed the whole thing.
They are pretty funny.
I got to say my...
Yeah.
I was going to say my favorite character, I think, was Susie Fusion. She seems really fun.
Yeah.
I like the somewhat naive but good-hearted type character.
Mm-hmm.
I also like some of the minor characters, like the Speedster and the Green Lantern type character.
Mm-hmm.
I think they're pretty cool. Although they introduced in the Zero issue in the public service announcements my new absolute favorite power, which I've never seen anybody have before.
Whoa.
And that's the guy that could change rocks into food that had zero calories and all the nutrition you need for it. I was like, I want that power. That could solve any problem with weight ever.
See, and for me, it would solve the problem of not wanting to cook. So it's, yeah.
Well, you can, he made a rock taste like a Dove bar dipped in Godiva chocolate, which had no calories or fat in it, and all the vitamins you need for the day.
Okay, ready? Get on that.
Yeah. I also really like Hesta, the goddess of the hearth.
Yeah.
Which I didn't see in, come up at all again. In
she
the
she does.
Have you done the
there.
Papyrus thing yet?
Oh, yeah, and I really like the plot that she pops back up in.
Yeah.
I can't really say anything about it, but that was very cool. And they kind of had planted the seeds of that in the very first issue.
Yep.
In the zero issue, which was very cool. But
yeah.
A couple of my other favorites, obviously Murphy, who is they can't actually say that he's the Sandman, he's Morpheus, but...
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, the daydream.
The kid version of him.
Oh, and I really like the alien.
What's his name?
Protus or yeah, it's like something PR something.
It's from
Prospero.
Shakespeare.
Prospero.
Prospero.
Oh, you know who we haven't mentioned at all is the teachers.
I was thinking about that. That
yeah.
No one mentioned the teachers, but to me, the teachers are all kind of very one-dimensional.
Oh, that changes it. But the main woman. Who is blonde, whose name I'm also forgetting.
It's Christy, is the first name.
Miss Kyle? Kyle, yes.
Miss
Kyle.
Kyle. Yeah.
She has no powers, does she?
Yeah, she does.
Okay, so that must be revealed later.
Right.
Yeah,
yeah but right. I love her.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's definitely the person that the kids have the most interaction with and therefore is a really good... If we're saying, like, a connection to the audience, she's a very good one because she links the adult world to the children's world.
Right.
To me, all the adults just, number one, they seem, you know, this is kind of derogatory, but they all seem kind of the same intelligence level as the kids. I don't know, there wasn't a whole lot separating the adults from the kids and a lot of the way they acted, I think. Which is good, especially if you're writing this comic book for kids, because, as you said, it doesn't talk down to kids. But there were some times when I had a hard time telling the difference between the two. Like, especially with the art, like if you just saw this panel, and I'm pointing to one of the Zero issues where Miss Kyle's eating a rock, would you know if that was an adult or a kid? Would you know if that was an adult or a kid? Especially since she's eating a rock.
Well, I like that she's kind of drawn to look like an actual person, at least in the style of this artist. She looks, you know, to most adults, there are adults with rather round, me being one, like round childlike faces and not, you know, super skinny or really tall. So I like that she seems very real.
No, I agree with that. I didn't have a huge problem with the art. I just had, you know, sometimes I had trouble telling the kids from the adults. They just seemed one-dimensional to me. But otherwise...
But I think in the intro, I think in the early stages, they're really establishing all the kids. And I think they establish more later.
Which is fine.
I do feel like... There were times for me, and especially later, so not necessarily in this first issue or trade, where I didn't necessarily agree with the decisions that the adults made or understand them. And I think, like, I kind of was able to dismiss that easily by saying that the story is really from the viewpoint of the kids.
Right.
And you don't necessarily know what's going on behind the scenes with the adults, and that actually comes up, and you figure out that, like, oh, there were reasons for these things, but that were just not obvious at all.
And sometimes we do get to see what's going on with the adults, like in the teacher lounge or wherever it is. There's another character I really like. There's a time-traveling character called Tom Davison.
So
sounds like it's
Tom Baker, Peter Davison.
And yeah, so I was wondering, is Davison the last name of one of the doctors?
Peter Davison, the fifth doctor.
So yeah, so there's Tom Baker, Peter Davison, and this character is Tom Davison. And he has sort of a doctorish role, and I like him. I think he's pretty cool.
It sounds like he wasn't in the first volume, though.
No.
Was he a kid or an adult?
Kid.
He's a kid.
Yeah.
That's, you know what, it hadn't occurred to me that he was Doctor Who.
Quite one, as eccentric as the Doctor can be, but
yes.
He sort of fills that sort of role.
One other minor criticism about the adults was that whenever the kids got into trouble, whether they were being naughty or were just in danger, they didn't seem to care. they didn't seem to react at all.
That's a thing about kids' literature. I mean, that was one of the huge complaints people had with Harry Potter.
Well, the difference with Harry Potter and with Harry Potter is that Harry and, you know, they would scold the kids from time to time. They would tell the kids, don't do this, don't do that, and the kids would either disobey or just find themselves in weird circumstances. Whereas in this, they seemed to be fully aware of everything that was going on with the kids, but just kind of shrugged their shoulders almost.
Well, and they do kind of reference that a couple of the kids are really kind of invulnerable.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. Well,
more powerful than them.
Right.
Yeah.
I see them like taking all sorts of precautions, like to keep the kids from using their powers dangerously. I don't know. I don't see where what you're saying.
I'm trying to think of an example.
Yeah.
Whenever there was, I don't know, it seemed like the strictest punishment seemed to be just withholding recess for a little bit of time.
Well, they are kids.
Yeah, no, I agree. It was a very minor complaint. It might be something that...
What do you
want to
do, strip them of their powers?
No, he wants spankings.
Lots and lots,
spankings.
Lots and lots of spankings.
Spankings.
You've read too much Registration Act stuff.
No.
I do think that one of the things I like about Miss Kyle is that she's very unflappable, though. I mean, to your point, like, she does not
maybe
get hysterical or get, you know, really...
You know, maybe that's it. Maybe I was looking for more, a little bit more realism, realistic reactions from parents to kids, which is never, you know, which is beside the point of the comic, which I understand, but maybe it's just I'm used to that in comic books. And expecting to see it a little bit more. So,
well, by realism, do you just mean like hysterics or people acting stupid? I mean,
well,
what do you mean by realism?
Overreacting on parents' part sometimes when, you know, at least in kids' eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think they had some of that in this trade.
I don't think
well,
so.
Not overreacting, but more in that the parents really kind of had blinkers on where everything but their child was concerned. Kind of like, you know, Tyler's parents.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was another something, I forget what that was, but there was some parent that was kind of overreacting to something. Maybe it was off panel. I don't remember now.
Well, there might have been some parents overreacting a little bit.
Actually,
but the teachers themselves.
Like, the parents barely factor into it at all.
Yeah.
Well, and I've always found that, you know, most, at least elementary school teachers, were pretty well balanced.
I was taught by nuns.
Oh, well, there you go. See, you have a...
I went to a Catholic grade school, so I
public
had...
Public school...
I had German nuns who were practically Nazis, so... and may have been, for as old as they were, they may have been Nazis in hiding.
Our mother actually was a nun and a teacher.
And a teacher.
Oh.
But she was a nice one.
Although we never
did they
had her as a
change
teacher.
I did.
Things
oh, really?
For nuns...
Yes.
When,
well, she stopped being a nun.
Oh, okay.
Before she was our mother. But she was a teacher
like,
the whole time.
Didn't they make a movie about this?
She was a nun for like 12 years or so. Yeah.
Yep, so she and got her teacher. Yep, she got her degree and taught that whole time. And then after she left, she continued to teach.
Oh. Well, granted, it's so long ago. But I just remember my elementary school teachers as being like... you're talking about how this is kind of from the point of view of the kids. When you, well, again, you have a bad example, Mike. But for me, my elementary school teachers, just about all of them were, like, in my eyes, perfect. You know, they just really couldn't seem to, like, do anything wrong. They were, I don't know.
I had a teacher in third grade that... was like it was like her first year teaching, and she may have even been a sub at the beginning, and then they hired her on or something. And literally, we would hide under the desk and just play in the back of the room all day. Like,
there, yeah.
I don't. Wait, it couldn't have been third grade because I had somebody else in third grade. It was like I think it was second grade.
I think the first teacher that I had, where It was kind of what you described, where they seemed perfect and fun, was seventh grade. Before then, I remember very strict. But I also went to a very inner city school, too, so both kindergarten and grade school. So kids were pretty unruly from time to time, and teachers had to deal with that.
My strongest, like, disciplinary elementary school memory is that I actually had a teacher in, I think it was kindergarten, who washed one of the kids' mouths out with soap.
Whoa, is that...
His dad actually did that.
Oh, I remember kids getting hit with rulers.
Whoa.
Well, yeah, you had nuns.
Well, no, this was the public kindergarten I went to.
Oh, really?
Yeah. But remember, this was, like, late 70s, so...
Like 1870s?
No. That, you know, the whole, you know, teachers being able to spank their kids and hitting them across the knuckles with rulers, not very hard, I would assume, but it never happened to me, I don't remember. That doesn't go as far back as you would think it would.
I remember my first grade teacher
I was a wuss.
Calling me a crybaby in front of the class.
Wow.
Yeah.
So apparently I had a bit of a golden childhood.
I remember...
I
remember.
I also remember a kid getting duct taped to his desk by one of the teachers.
Really?
Wow!
He ended up getting out of his desk. This might have been second grade or first grade, but just couldn't deal with him getting up out of his desk as much as he did, and duct taped him to it.
I remember.
And
a,
I don't know if that was something they legally could have done, could do, but it happened.
I remember a student, and this wasn't like physical abuse at all, but it was definitely mental abuse. When she called on a kid in class, the teacher did, and you know, the kid didn't have her hand raised or anything. She just said, "Tanya, choose the answer." I remember this very clearly. This was from like third grade, and she was like, "It's a little hard to explain." And then she says, "Well, maybe someone in the classroom could help Tanya out a little bit." In that tone of voice, and I remember thinking back then that that was really mean for a teacher to say.
Wow,
so,
no,
it's kind of made an impression on me.
I really don't, maybe I've just suppressed all of any bad memories.
Maybe Rainbow Bright was your teacher, and you had Care Bears and Smurfs. Sorry. I saw Smurfs at the store the other day. I didn't think they were
Well, I think everything that we did when we were kids is now being marketed to...
It's a 20-year cycle.
Yeah, to kids of people our age.
I didn't realize the Smurfs had made...
Care Bears made a return a little while.
Yeah, that,
while
that I knew.
I can't wait for the Silverhawks to come back.
Yeah. Be waiting a while for that one.
I don't know what that is.
You should Google it. Because I was only just reminded of it by, I think, like, Matt Wigg or somebody. Like, somebody on Facebook posted about the Silverhawks, and I was like,
Matt
oh
Wigg's,
my god!
I don't think Matt Wigg's on
You know, speaking of Silverhawks and cartoons and bringing it back to PS238, I would totally watch a PS238 cartoon.
Yeah.
Yeah, I could see that. That would very easily lend itself to a cartoon.
You know who I had forgotten about entirely until just looking at this? Is the
Luck Girl?
No, I was going to say the Hulk character.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I thought he was going to be a much more major character, and he was barely in it.
No, well, you still have to read the last issue.
Running gag as well, just being hairy and
was he
smashy.
Hairy?
Well, he's more like the Beast than the Hulk.
He's a cross. He's more Hulk-like because his dad obviously turns into the Hulk when he got angry. But he's blue, so he looks like the Beast.
And he runs around on all fours.
He acts like an uncontrollable, kind of smashy...
He's like Bam Bam.
He's a lot more happy-go-lucky than the Hulk.
He's like Bam Bam from the Flintstones.
Yes.
He is kind of a Bam Bam character.
Bam! Bam! Bam!
He's very sweet.
Very good.
Very good, Mike. Nice job.
I really empathize with Bam Bam.
What about
you,
does this
too strong for your surroundings?
That's right. I often destroyed things that I loved.
So does Kid Gambit come back later on? The kid with the trench coat? The normal kid who's
oh,
yes.
Old. Okay.
Yeah,
yeah,
he's actually a major,
he's
character.
A major character.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
I called him Kid Gambit because he had the trench coat that looked like Gambit as a kid.
You know,
so
I think there's another character that I felt like he was actually meant to be, and I now I'm not remembering.
Von Fogg in his hologram with the
German
hat.
Very German. the suspenders.
The bowler.
Yeah.
And apparently Popeye arms.
Kind of, yeah.
I just thought those were rolled up sleeves.
No, they're short sleeves. I don't think they're rolled up
Popeye
sleeves.
Arms.
I think everything, all the art is a little bit rounder in this first trade, I think, than in other ones.
Well, and yeah, I mean, art does evolve, you know. Someone who does all their own art, you can definitely trace that evolution.
I gotta say my favorite sequence in the first trade, which is probably the best moment I had from any of the adults, was when they were on the moon, and what's his name? Tyler?
Tyler? Is that the one without powers?
Yeah. Calls his mentor. And he kind of guides him through, you know, picking up clues and, you know, using his detective skills to find his way back to help, you know, help yourself and everything.
Yeah, and his mentor is a Batman-like character who also has no powers, so the teacher is sort of sympathizing with Tyler, connected him up with this Batman-like character who would be able to teach him how to live in a world of superheroes, but
without dying.
Yeah.
Yeah, I just thought it was a really cool sequence. While, you know, he's in this battle, the character's named the Revenant.
He's the Batman-like character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who when I first read that, I thought it said they're relevant.
and when the funny thing about him is, like, every time you see him communicate with kids, he's actually in a battle. every single time.
Yeah.
Every single time.
He's just, you know, he's much, you know, more of a positive Batman.
Yes.
Than,
yeah.
Especially if you read the Frank Miller Batman and Robin comics, that's
sure,
a pretty brutal Batman. he's just guiding him through, you know,
I'm the goddamn Batman.
the most important thing is not to panic. Is everybody okay? Do you have any supplies or gear?
I totally thought it sounded like you were going to say suppositories.
Do you have any suppositories?
Right, the utility belt can have a lot.
Speaking of Batman, did everybody listen to the MP3 of what's his name? Just going
Christian
ancient?
Bale?
Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Well, I heard the rant itself.
I
didn't hear the remix.
It. I really don't. Why is this
a
story?
Let me continue. So many of you have probably seen it. Have you also seen the YouTube video that's been passed around this week of the kid who is on Novocaine? Like, he's not just Novocaine, but totally stoned, basically, from going to the dentist. I don't know if you've seen it or not,
I
but
have.
I can send you the links. Anyway, I saw a mashup today of the two. So it sounds like Christian Bale is just swearing at this kid. It's really, really funny. And the kid is saying things like, I have four fingers.
You son of a bitch.
Yeah, it's really
funny. Are you retarded?
Yeah, I mean, he's saying stuff like that.
It's as bad as those Super Bowl commercials. God.
I didn't watch any of the Super Bowl commercials this year
either.
Those weren't Super Bowl commercials. I'm thinking of the commercials, the Coors commercials that they showed during regular season football games that were, they took coaches in, at interviews, at press conferences, and, forget it. They're just some... it
good
makes
friends.
My brain hurt.
Good
zombies!
We'll pick up this topic at the next podcast.
Well, back to PS2 Create, we kind of forgot an important element is that the school for the superheroes is underneath a normal public school.
Yeah.
And the kids sort of have to interact with the kids from the regular school.
Yeah, I find that part a little less interesting.
Some do so well and some not so well. And the ones that can't really look that normal have to wear holograms. And, yeah. And Zodan and Bonfog try to recruit minions from the from
yeah.
middle school. Yeah.
I actually love their, like, wandering around with, like, these, like, minion sign-up forms.
Yeah.
That people have to sign.
Applications.
Yeah,
yeah,
applications for minionhood.
Oh,
they're
I
so
love
good.
It, too.
Did,
and the
did the first volume have the actual form in the back? One, I know one of them did.
The form?
I don't
maybe.
I think so. I like wanted to take
yeah,
the quiz.
Yeah, it does.
Oh, it does? Oh, sorry.
I want to become a minion of, circle one, Zodan Von Fogg, because I agree wholeheartedly with my future master's plans, or B, I wish to see graduation by being on the winning side. C, or I wish to live to see graduation. See, I don't want to be disintegrated. Or D, I'm more of a sniveling toting follower than a leader.
Clearly we know which one Mike would check.
Which one would
yeah,
that be?
I totally like, went through the whole list and tried to pick my answers.
Yeah.
What's
yeah.
your favorite aspect of being a minion? Safety, direction, masochism.
Masochism,
thank you, sorry. Evil laughter, revenge, getting to stay up late.
Evil laughter.
Totally.
I'd say revenge. Of those that have persecuted you.
Yeah. Well.
What do you think of the big robot, Marty? The big transformer robot.
Yeah, it was cool. I mean, and it was all, you know, about Prospero.
Yeah.
So
he is kind of an intriguing character.
Yeah,
I assume they're going to do a lot more with him.
They
yeah.
do sort of.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean,
we'll
kind
find
of.
Out.
Yeah,
we'll
you'll find
out.
But I also really liked, and I don't remember if she was in this one. The
oh.
the girl who becomes his friend, and I don't
think she is.
I don't think
one.
She's
yeah,
in this one.
I don't
think
so. She's
give,
sort of the jive talking one.
Do they give him a decoder?
No, he just continues to speak in his language and nobody can understand him except for this girl, maybe.
Hmm.
She says she understands.
I want to know what he says in this issue where, I mean, they're like full.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where he's looking at this guy. And I mean, this is like.
And he's gesturing with his staff and makes this big declaration.
Well, you know, it's entirely possible that is actually decodable and we could figure it out.
Has
no.
anybody looked it up? I know that.
Yeah.
For Order of the Stick, people have decoded. There's a one character who has some sort of spell cast on her, or cursed or something, and she, all of her word balloons are transposed characters.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, someone has
gone through and
done the work for you.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the same thing was in Secret Invasion. I'm pretty sure the Skrull language.
Oh, really?
Because you'd see the same characters pop up every so often.
Well, in every language that's in any of the DC comics, Kryptonian, I mean, all it ever is transposition.
Now, one thing that intrigued me about the alien was when you first encountered him with the groundskeeper Willie guy. I can't remember his name.
Clay.
Okay.
Yeah, totally.
And he, you know, he's got his Nerf gun shooting. Or his Nerf ball shooting
Which is
gun.
Adorable.
Yes.
Yeah, it is. But I totally got the impression that he was trying to kill him at first, and I was surprised at what the result was.
That it wasn't killing him.
Because, like, he shoots him, and a Nerf ball pops out and bumps against his head, and then he's, like, staring at his gun, and he's kind of, almost looks like he's cursing it or something.
See, I looked at that, and I totally read it as, hee hee.
Oh, really? Okay.
Which means that that symbol is a Z, and that symbol is an E. So
well,
yeah.
You mean that's an H.
Or
yeah.
Z,
the Z,
that
like
symbol
an
is an H.
Yeah, I think I remember that more as his being, like, being amused at that.
Oh, really?
And further issues, you see him, like, anytime, he'll have a conversation nobody can understand, and he'll leave, and then he will bounce this little ball from his gun against their head.
It's almost, yeah.
It's just like...
Oh, my God. You know what? And then that's
all
probably
purpose
a T,
side
that's
of affection.
T-H-E.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we could totally decode this.
All right.
It's a puzzle.
Your turn.
That's Jason's going to be bored in L.A., so he can do that. I don't know. I just kind of got the impression that that maybe the gun was more, or it was more powerful on his native planet, or they're not as, they've got transforming robots to protect them, and they're actually very fragile.
You know, I did also think that at first.
That it was supposed to...
Yeah, that it was supposed to be, like...
More.
Yeah.
More menacing.
That it was going
to
turn violent and not be a kid's comic anymore.
Well, I knew it was still going to be a kid's comic. That's why it was ineffectual.
Well, it was kind of along the same lines as the kid that swears but sings show tunes instead.
Yeah.
You know?
Just thwarted.
So you mentioned L.A. I'm going to go off topic here for a second. I'm going to L.A. this weekend for the Doctor Who convention. I leave on Wednesday. And I'm trying to decide which comics I'm going to bring with me to read on the plane and stuff. And one of the ones that I am bringing is I'm bringing Volume 2 of the ElfQuest archives.
Oh.
Which I've read Volume 1. They had them at the St. Paul Library. And I decided to read these because a couple of the guests at the Doctor Who convention are Wendy and Richard Pini, who created ElfQuest. And it's entertaining.
Doesn't that involve an elf on a horse, though?
I don't think they ride horses.
Don't they ride wolves?
Yeah, they ride
wolves.
Isn't
that close enough, though?
It's an elf on a wolf. Shut up. It's not thrilling me, but, you know, it's kind of...
Are you going to get them to sign the library copy?
Yeah, I thought about that, actually. But I was going to say that ElfQuest is a series that's... I mean, it's kind of legendary of in comics. You know, it's
how long has it been running? It's
since the late 70s. And I mean, it's one of those independent comics along with Bone and what's the one that Dave Sim? Cerebus.
Yep.
That it...
And you can read the whole thing online now.
What, ElfQuest?
Yep.
Oh, okay.
It's been through a number of different publishers, too.
Yeah, but the, you know, DC is publishing an archive edition. They apparently, you know, licensed
Didn't
the right
Marvel
to...
Didn't Marvel have it at some point? Didn't it get published under Epic?
It might have, yeah. Yeah.
And there's something in a different one.
And I read, like I said, I read the first volume. It was entertaining. It's not something that, you know, I was, like, so totally enamored of. It does seem...
A long time ago, I, like, picked up the first thing from my library and tried to read, like, the first issue, and it's just like, eh. But obviously it's been going on for 30 years, so probably it could have gotten better since then, so I don't know.
Yeah, well, I figured that I'll go to a couple of their panels out there, and I'd like to, you know, have a little background.
Can you record audio on your phone yet?
I haven't tried.
You could do the little...
I could roving. Wendy and Richard Pini say no.
You could. So who's the guest of honor?
Colin Baker.
Okay.
Just like he was in Chicago.
Oh.
But
the doctor with the least amount to do.
Sorry. Least amount to do.
Well, I mean, he's always at the conventions. Everyone else.
Oh,
is
well,
Chicago,
you know.
The guy who only did the movie probably would have been.
Paul McGann? He was at L.A. a couple years ago.
I wouldn't be surprised if he does other stuff, though, other than...
No, cause... no, I mean, not like with the least amount of working, but like the least amount to do as the Doctor.
Yeah.
Since he only did that one.
They've all done a lot of audios, though.
I saw him in something.
Did they announce who the next Doctor is yet?
Oh, yeah, they did that a while ago. Matt Smith.
That's right, yeah.
Yeah, Matt Smith, who is younger than all of us.
Yeah.
Really?
He's 26.
So my question is,
I was
does
right,
the Doctor
get
younger with every generation?
You know what? I thought that was a rule, but apparently it wasn't. I thought that was a rule that that was established around the Tom Baker, who was after that?
Peter Davison.
Peter Davison. That with every regeneration,
that
number
actually,
one, I thought there was a limited amount of regenerations they were supposed to have, and that with each one they got younger.
Well, there is supposed to be a limited number. Except, of course,
it was seven, wasn't it?
No, it's 13.
Oh.
Well, 12 regenerations into 13 incarnations.
Okay.
The whole getting younger is... That has actually been brought up in, like, fan writing and stuff, where it is that when Time Lords are born, they are... to get respect... Their first incarnation generally has them elderly.
Is Benjamin Button?
It's not that they age backwards necessarily, but just that they in order to try to seem more respectable, you know, that
They overcompensate?
They overcompensate. Of course,
but wouldn't all
Time Lords...
Time Lords see an old guy and know that he's really young? And
well, but when you're young, you're foolish, and, you know, you...
Okay.
Yeah, well, who, in the terms of the show, would the older doctors, the ones that were played by the oldest actors, are they the most reckless ones of them?
Well, there's the other problem, is that the only Time Lords that are reckless
yeah.
are renegades.
Like
well,
the Doctor,
I mean,
the
isn't
Master.
The Doctor reckless?
Yeah, I was
yeah,
just going to say.
But,
yeah.
I mean, which would you say is the most, embodies that the most?
What do you mean?
Recklessness. Who's the most reckless Doctor?
Oh, I don't know.
Sure you do. You know everything about Doctor Who. If you don't, you don't.
That's clearly, you know, it's...
You're shattering my illusions.
It's just a TV show, Mike.
No!
It's a life. It's, you know,
I'm
going to
miss 10. I liked 10.
I'm over 10. Tenant. I'm over Tenant.
I liked him.
I liked
too.
Him. He's cute.
Yeah.
So is Matt
yeah.
Smith, kind of.
Well, I haven't seen photos of him.
So if he was 10, then we've had 11, and now we're having 12.
Well,
no,
Matt
Smith
this was
be
number
11.
Oh, okay.
So
they haven't gone through all of their...
No, but they're fast approaching it.
Yeah.
You have to go through them every year.
They better lock them into a 20-year contract or something.
Well, no. It's fiction. They'll come up with
yeah,
something.
Well,
they
yeah.
say that all the Time Lords are gone, so he has all the rest of their regenerations, you know?
Well, and I was just going to say, it's not that there was a limitation. That was my understanding, was that it was that the council only granted you
exactly,
12
yes.
regenerations.
So,
with no council,
but
no
there's
rules.
All... interpretations, you know. Some
right.
people have said that, no, that's, the 13 was a hard and fast rule, and another said, you know, no, it was a council grant, and it's, you know, there's, there will people, you'll find people who can argue it any way you want.
Do you think they're ever going to, like, tell the story of the, you know, the war that, you know, got rid of all
the
other
Time
War?
Yeah, I think that's supposed to be one of the specials coming up.
Mm-hmm. Oh, really?
Okay, so now, was the first Doctor that we have seen on television supposed to be his very first body?
That is the question. That has also been argued among Ooh. Fandom. it depends on what you consider to be canon. And there's an episode, a Tom Baker episode called The Brain of Morbius, where he's fighting another Time Lord, and they have a Time Lord duel. And there are images of them fighting, and it goes back through their regenerations. And so, you know, you have their previous incarnations appearing before you and everything. And they go back from Tom Baker through John Pertwee, Patrick Troughton, William Hartnell, and then other faces start appearing. But before it was Tom Baker, John Pertwee, you saw the other Time Lord, and that went back through a couple of regenerations. Then Tom Baker back through a couple of regenerations. So the question is, were these people before William Hartnell, were they supposed to be regenerations before the first Doctor? Or were they before the other guy?
Or were they just other people not related,
you know,
to
them? And then there's been books that have been written
well, okay.
that say that it's his first incarnation.
Well, if he did have previous incarnations...
Then we'd be past...
Well,
possibly past
and
13.
Would the story of the five Doctors be non-canon then?
As far as canon goes, pretty much people have said that anything that has appeared on television as Doctor Who that hasn't been a comedic, like, Curse of Fatal Death,
sure.
that's not canon.
Yeah.
But anything that has... been considered a regular series episode is canon.
So was the five Doctors a special, or was it an actual episode?
It was a regular series,
but that
episode
apparently contained all of his incarnations up until that point.
Not necessarily. They never said that,
didn't they?
No, not.
I thought it did.
No,
I thought it was a crisis that involved all of his.
Wait! It was a crisis.
Yeah, it was something that
crisis of infinite doctors.
It was something that brought all of the doctors together, and you know they worked side by side, except for Tom Baker because he was beyond Doctor Who at that point.
they
never used footage.
They never specifically said that it was all of his incarnations. I mean, if that was the case, why weren't there any future ones?
13,
well, up to
know,
that point.
Because, yeah.
Well,
what is
why couldn't he meet
point?
A future incarnation of himself?
Right.
Maybe they did. We didn't see him. They got left. They were told to guard the TARDIS.
All right.
Wasn't there, like, two feature-length movies that, like, appeared in actual movie theaters?
Yep,
those
were in the 60s. No, those are not considered canon. In fact, he's not even considered an alien in those. He's an eccentric inventor. Played by Peter Cushing.
What?
Peter
yeah.
Cushing.
And it had Susan and Barbara and Ian. And Susan and Barbara were both his granddaughters.
What?
They were sisters, and both his granddaughters, and Susan was a little girl.
How many hearts did he have?
Just one. He was human.
Oh.
Wait, so...
These movies were... They're not canon. And they were more to do with the Daleks than they were to do with the Doctor.
Now, which trait of PS-238 does all this happen in?
It's between the lines. You have to read between the lines.
Well, actually, I mean, Zodan could be a Dalek. Maybe he grows up to become...
If the Daleks sing show tunes. Which
yeah.
would be cool. Which would be cool.
A metal man, isn't he?
A Cyberman?
Cyberman.
No, because the Daleks hover, and he hovers.
And the Daleks are also, you know, originated as organic beings who chose to...
Well, so did Cybermen.
Yeah.
I know. Well, I'm saying that being like Cybermen does not mean you're not like Daleks.
True.
In that sense.
Right.
Okay.
To have chicken pox and then he'd be a Dalek.
Speaking of PS-238, I need to get going.
What everybody think of
the bell has rung.
The teacher that looks like Dracula crossed with somebody from Kiss. What was... She was kind of cool, but I didn't know what to make of her at first.
Well, she's a Doctor Strange type.
Yeah.
Instructor.
Yeah. But I still couldn't get over that she was like the fifth Kiss member or something.
Yeah.
I do love PS-238, and I do want to continue on with the series.
I want to keep reading it.
Me too.
Does the principal of the normal or the mundane school, does she appear more than the one time in the first trade?
With the back of her head?
Because they don't show her face for some reason. I thought that kind of odd.
The principal's
and
kind of different later.
There are definitely other scenes with her, but I don't remember if they show her or not.
Hmm.
She's like Mr. Bosley or, no, Mr. Hart.
You know?
No, what was it from... Charlie from Charlie's Angels.
Very
Bosley.
Good, very
Charlie.
Good. Mr.
Charlie.
Hart. Yeah, but it's not
Charlie's
cool.
Angels mixed
like,
with Heart to Heart.
She shows up, but like maybe one more time, and I don't remember if we see her face or not, but I don't think it's like setting up to something.
Yeah.
Or that kind of thing.
Well, not
importance.
Yet, anyway.
One thing I have noticed is that we really haven't been informed of what Zodan's actual background is. Most of the other main characters we know, you know, their parents are this, or they come from this family, or they're from this planet. Zodan, we don't really know where he's from, or if he has parents, or a family, or what.
Yeah. Well, I think that we will speculate on that as we look forward to new trades, and wrap up for the evening.
Okay. And whose pick is it next?
I think it's mine, isn't it? I went after Marty last time.
Yeah.
But didn't we skip somebody recently?
Susie and I flipped.
Oh, okay.
But we both got turns.
Why, do you have something in mind, Mike?
I've got an inkling. I'm not sure if it's one I'm going to go with. I'm thinking, my intent was to bring it back to superhero comics, but we kind of did that with this one.
Mm-hmm.
Even though it's non-traditional superhero comics. But I was going to go with... the latest run of Thor.
Oh,
by
Straczynski.
By Straczynski, yeah, which is up to 12 issues now.
That sounds awesome.
Yeah.
I was considering that. I'll just say I'll go with that. We'll do that.
Okay.
Cool. I've never read any Thor.
I don't think you have to have for this.
Well, the first issue, you do kind of have to know a little bit about the background that in the not too far...
Ragnarok happened.
Yeah, Ragnarok happened, and all the gods died, and Asgard was destroyed.
I think I might have read one of these issues at your house.
Okay.
But, yeah, I was just going to say that I picked up a few at your place, and I'm pretty sure I had no problem
getting them from...
You guys read, like, all of Buffy Season 8 without... Like, if Mike, you had never even seen Buffy, so...
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, but Mike was confused.
I have to say, like, I have no opinion on it because I've never read any Thor. I don't think I've even read any Avengers with him in it, so...
But you're familiar with Straczynski, some.
I'll basically be a blank slate.
Okay, but you just have to know he's the God of Thunder. Arr.
He is the God of Thunder.
He's the God of Thunder.
That's Iron Man.
Yeah, you're getting confused there.
I am the God of Rock and Roll.
Okay. So.
Okay.
Bye.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.